Okay, an Ironman is a 2.6 miles on the swim, 112 miles on the bike, and a marathon altogether. So basically, it's 146 miles altogether. Yeah, I did it with a blind person. Yeah, guiding him. And it took me 60 hours, 44 minutes.
I'm Trey.
I'm Quest.
And we're your hosts. Each week, we'll seek out and interview the heroes that live amongst us.
And each week, we'll ask them to tell us the story of an adventure that challenged them, stuck with them, and forced them to grow.
This is our truest adventure. Nacho.
Just like the chips, right?
Just like the chips, yeah. Actually, the story of my name is a name in Spain. The chip comes after my name. It comes after a waiter who invented, and his name was Nacho. That's the story of the chip. It's not the other way around.
Oh, so the guy who invented the chips that we all know
so
and eat is Nacho.
So basically, this Mexican waiter was working in a military station, and they ran out the food. So he just cut these tortillas in triangles and fry them and just serve them with guacamole. The people loves it so much, they came back and say, we want that thing that Nacho did. And that is how the chip started.
I hope that's a true story.
If it's
not a true story, it's the new true story.
I'm about to change the Wikipedia page for nachos to be that story, whether it is true or not. That's gold.
It's a super popular name in Spain. My best two friends are called Nacho too. It's not just me.
Wow. And wait, and so
hold on real quick. I got to ask then, if you roll around with two other guys named Nacho, is it like Nacho Uno, Nacho Dos?
No, so like, basically we have three, and one is Nachete, the other one is Nacho, and the other one is Nachito.
Oh, so who's Nachito? Because that's like little Nacho, right?
Yeah. Nachito is me.
You're Nachito.
I'm the older, but I don't know why I'm Nachito. Because Nachito.
Oh, wait, so you're the oldest Nacho, but you end up having to be little Nacho?
Yeah, because the Nacho is like a very tender, close way to someone. In Spain, everything like is close. We just tend it to the diminutive, which is like Ito.
Yeah.
So it's like very friendly. It's more friendly. Nacho is like more normal. It's the normal one. Nachete is close, but Nachito is like super friendly.
Ah, okay. And it's funny to me. So I lived in Puerto Rico for a year and a half.
Okay.
And it was always funny to me the way they used what like in the US would be seem kind of derogative, but like they used it as a term of endearment. So if like there's a heavy set like person, they would call them gordito.
Yeah.
Which is like gordo is fat, and you add the ito, which means little, so it makes it cute.
Fatty. Because it's a friendly way. It's very friendly. It's like more closer.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it's not that aggressive. Mm. And gordo is offensive, but gordito is like, it's not that offensive.
No, gordito is fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me ask this, Nacho. Like, Nacho is just a nickname though, right? That's not.
Yeah. The name is Ignacio.
Ignacio.
This is like a very Latin ancient name. So no one calls Ignacio. It's like, I mean, unless that you are 80 years old or a priest or something like that.
Got it.
But it's, every Ignacio has been called Nacho. So Ignacio comes from the Latin, Ignatius, like Ignatius G. Really, like from Conspiracy of Days. It's the same name.
Got it. And so we've kind of alluded to this already. About your Spanish heritage, like, so you're originally from Spain, right?
Yeah. Born and raised there.
How did you end up coming to the States and why?
Okay, so I'm an art dealer. My dad was an art dealer, and I started to work at my dad's gallery like in 1989, and then I moved to London because I did my degree there. And then when I came back,
Let's break this up, Nacho, because this is all like super interesting. Because I ran with you in New York. You came down here with a crew of the Bridge Runners and ran with us in New Orleans. And I didn't know any of this, so I'm super interested to learn all this from you about your life. So, what did you get your degree in London, and where'd you study?
I did a study photography.
Okay.
And then after 4 years, I was there 1994. 1996, 1999. And then I went back to Spain. I was going to open my own gallery, but then my dad got sick and he eventually died. So I spoke with my siblings and say, okay, what do you think if I take over the gallery? So I start to run the gallery. And then after several years, I asked them, okay, what do you think if I just get the gallery by my own? It's just going to be my business and we will just find a way to compensate each other, which that happened like 2007. And then in 2012, all Europe, but especially Spain, we got in a big crisis. So things were kind of struggling for our contemporary art outside the capital, which because I'm from Valencia, I'm not from Madrid or Barcelona. So eventually this gallery from New York just offered me a really good job. And I was like, what the hell? I'm just going. So I just moved to New York. So
are you still at that gallery in New York?
No, I moved to another one. So after 2 years, another even better gallery offered me a better job. And I moved to, I was in the Lower East Side, and I moved to Chelsea, which is where I am now.
What's your title with the gallery? Like, what do you do?
So we are two directors. I'm one of the directors. Yeah.
Wow.
So I just take care of, I'm more in the more like the, I take care of the installation, the transports, all the production of the works with the artists and all the stuff. And then the bureaucratic part is just my coworker who takes care of it. Also, we do obviously all the fairs and we travel a lot. We have to prepare everything for the art fairs. We do a lot of art fairs, national, international. And yeah, just travel sometimes and prepare the shows. And contacts go to the studio, choose the artist, sometimes choose the works, the production, the framing, the transport, the packing, the installation, the art handling, everything.
Well, and see, you know, the funny thing is, like, we have this running joke since you were down here in New Orleans, just hearing the little bits and pieces about your life that we've all learned. It's like, you know, the Dos Equis man, the most interesting man in the world, has retired and you're like his heir apparent. So it's like Nacho Equis.
Yeah, I know.
Nacho is like, we told you, our podcast is called The Truest Adventure. And so the thing that we like to have people come onto the podcast and talk about is what is their or what was their truest adventure? And also, like, truest adventure could mean whatever you want it to mean, and just kind of tell us, like, when I say truest adventure, like, what do you think of?
Well, okay, so for me, it's always, I mean, in terms of running or in terms of life?
Like life, man, whatever you want it to be.
I mean, life is always a new challenge. You just go and explore and try to collaborate with people in order to know things and experience life, no? Like any kind of, I'm just any kind of event, I'm up for it. Just go somewhere and just discover, like from food to run everywhere and just travel. I really like all those things. So in terms of challenge, no? For instance, right now, I'm very focused in qualify for Boston, no? So all my life just runs around, just get in shape and just get a good training and just be rest and just be prepared in order to want the 28th of May to run faster than I've never done in my life. So
okay, and so what is the qualifying time then for Boston?
So for me now it's 3:20. Because I'm
3:20.
Yeah. I just it was 3:10, but I turned 45 and goes up 7 minutes, which is pretty good.
And so that's clear, like there's a lot of people who listen to our podcast who are runners, but Nacho is saying that to qualify for the Boston Marathon, he has to be able to run 26.2 miles in 3 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And how fast is that per mile, Nacho?
It's 7:37.
Wow. Ooh. So each mile in,
yeah,
the 26 7 minutes miles. And 30 seconds, 7 seconds are faster.
Yeah, the 26 miles. So in order to do that, I need to be 11 minutes faster than I've never been. So I'm changing my diet. I'm losing some weight. I'm eating properly and training and resting like in the order that I have to do it. And I'm trying to get some strength, some cold workout, and every now and then a massage to just to load the legs and the muscles. So trying to be really, really wise in times and in effort just to get there as as safe as possible.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you brought up the word collaborate with this adventure that you're on right now, trying to qualify for Boston. Are you collaborating with anyone on that?
I got friends that are helping me, and I also got friends that they want to qualify with me there. So it is all, for instance, this morning I was, we were, the long run, we were four people, two already qualified, and the other two, we are trying to qualify. So we want to do it all together. We are kind of helping each other. But it's also about any kind of collaboration, no? It's like, I think that is also good. That's why I like relays, and I like just to run with people, because it's kind of, you do the things together. After all, we're in all this together. So we have to do things together. I like
that. And so here's an interesting thought that I'm thinking about right now. I hate that I just prefaced that I think that my thought's interesting before even sharing it. I guess I should let that be decided by the people that I'm talking to first. But that idea of, what about the collaboration in your life between running and art? Like, how do those two things, because obviously you're passionate about running, be trying to go for Boston, and you're obviously very passionate about art. What is the collaboration process like that?
How I mix art and running?
Yes.
Okay. So a few friends and I, we do what we call the snake run. So basically is once every 2 months. So there's the best garages in the world are in Chelsea. So they go from 19th Street to 24th Street. And they are like from 10 to 11 in 6 blocks. So we run the Highland. You know what is the Highland? The Highland is an old train track that was going from the factories in the Meatpacking District to the Penn Station, and then everywhere. So that track is abandoned, and now it's like a garden, and some paisagistic landscape architects just took over, and it's a really nice place. So we start running there, and we go down for the galleries and do with like a snake, you know? So we do the 5 blocks running, and we are going and stopping in the galleries to see because these galleries are the best in the world. So you got shows that you cannot get in a lot of countries in Europe in the museums. So it's like Richard Serra or Robert Crumb or Raymond Pettibon or Ai Weiwei or Rothko, or it's amazing. So we kind of, I like to, people who normally don't do that very often that goes to the gallery just to mix running and go to shows. So, and then after we go for beers, of course.
And you go for beers, obviously. But how often do you do the snake run?
It depends of the people, but like once a month, every 2 months. Yeah.
Wow. And how would somebody?
Yeah, because the thing is that we need to wait till the shows change. So sometimes, say it again. Sorry.
Oh, I was just wondering, how does someone find out about the snake run? Is this like invite?
Yeah, no. I mean, we try to share with the friends, but it's like, I mean, everyone is invited, but it's like more a friend thing. Because I don't know, and maybe I should try to post it, and just that I'm a little bit shy with those things. So, I don't know.
How many galleries do you guys end up hitting up?
We hit like 6-7 galleries. Oh, that's amazing. Because if we stop all the time, it's not like. So I try to choose the ones I think that are really good, and sometimes we just go through one and say, okay, let's go in. But normally I know where we have to go.
Where is the furthest place you've gone to find a piece of art?
Where is it? I used to go a lot to Latin America because we got a lot of Latin American collectors. But I guess that I've been doing first all around Latin America, like Buenos Aires, Rio de Janeiro, Sao Paulo, Bogota, Lima, Mexico City, Santiago de Chile. So we went that far to try to sell artworks. Yeah.
Let me ask this, Nacho, like, just considering the fact that you've traveled to all those places like for your profession, we talked about what your current truest adventure is, like the challenge you're facing now with trying to qualify for Boston.
Yeah.
Like, can you just also give us the benefit of, like, if you were to consider 45 years of living this crazy life that you've lived, like, what's the truest adventure you've ever been on, like, out of anything that you've done?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I always think that the best part of my background is I just learning in the travel and the traveling, just meeting people and trying where I learned to be open about other people, other cultures, other religions. I think that everyone should travel in order just to be not very close about what they know. And in terms of meet how is the real life and in other places and just be more respectful with other people. I done pretty awesome things in this life, but I mean, for instance, like a big challenge last year, I trained with a visually impaired for the Ironman. And that was like 6 months of all my extra time committed and to that, said, like, so you, like a relationship.
And yeah, you said you trained with a visually impaired person for an Ironman.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for the people who like, maybe I've heard of Ironman, but don't know the details of it. What is an Ironman? Like, what is it?
Okay. An Ironman is a 2.6 miles on the swim. It's 112 miles on the bike and a marathon altogether.
Okay.
So basically it's 146 miles.
And so you did altogether. That with someone that was visually impaired?
Yeah, I did it with a blind person. Yeah. Guiding him.
Okay.
And it took me 60 hours, 44 minutes. So we started at
660.
No, no, 166. Yeah, 16. So we started at 6 a.m. and we finished almost at midnight.
I think that time would be significantly faster than anything that I could ever throw up there. That's super impressive, and the fact that you're doing that with a teammate, right? I mean, anything with a teammate, especially stuff that becomes really kind of physically strenuous, can really kind of break down a team. So what is that like working with someone that, you know, you guys are going through something really challenging, and then on top of that you throw in like the visual impairment aspect of it?
So you need to, first of all, you need to be friends. I'm always the Killis family. We are like a family. We are friends, and it's not like you just go and guide. No, we hang out together, we travel together, and we love each other. I think that without that, it will be totally impossible. It's also a question of trust. They have to trust you, because you have to remember that they cannot see. So you are their eyes. So it's a work that you have to do it like very close with each other. And it's about sharing. It's about giving. It's about taking. We both give and we both take. And it's a commitment. Because, for instance, for the swim, it's not that difficult. You just go to the swimming pool or to the run. But for the bike, you have to go to storage and get a tandem, because it's not a regular bike. It's a tandem. And then you have to go for a really long ride, because obviously you're training for 112 miles. You don't do the 112, but you have to do 60, 70 miles. So since I go from Brooklyn to get the bike in the Upper East Side, and then go through just Washington Bridge for a ride and come back, it's basically all day. And we have to do that every weekend. So it's like your extra time for a long time. Then you have to run twice a week, and then you have to swim once a week. So it's 4 days for 6 months.
The person you did this with, what is his or her name?
His name is Asim. He's like 30 years old. And he's originally from Pakistan. And that was his first Ironman too. It was our first Ironman for both of us. And was amazing. But also, he was afraid of the swim, and he canceled the race 1 week before the race. And then I told, okay, we're going to go to New Jersey. We're going to swim, because you need to be confident with the water. And he did it, and he did it like a rock star.
And then what's the logistics for in the swim? You're guiding him during the swim, but he has to free swim. Like, how do you?
So we are tied at like with elastic tether, even for the thigh or for the hip.
Okay.
And then we got a wetsuit normally, because it's good for floatability, and also because sometimes the water is very cold. and we need to, we train in the swimming pool, but we need to get a few of open water workouts before, especially for his confidence.
Right.
The so bike we do it in a, say it again, sorry.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm just wondering where you did the open water to
So the open water, we do it in three places. We do it in the beach, in Rockaway Beach, which is sea, which is not as good because normally the Ironmans are in lakes. We did it in City Island, which is also sea, but it's not as as it doesn't move as much as the ocean because it's the is the water coming through Long Island, so it's less waves. And we went to New Jersey to a couple of lakes just to get more confident. So it's, I mean, it's nice because obviously it's something that you're sharing and it's like a really, really big challenge, but also it takes a lot. But yeah, I mean, like was great. But the problem is that there's a cutoff in those races. So if you don't do the swimming under 2 hours, you stop the race. If you don't do the bike under 8 hours, the race is over for you. And if you do the marathon after six, you don't finish. And we passed the water by 7 minutes. We passed the bike by 12 minutes. Wow. And we made it in the whole race by 16 minutes.
Wow. That's the crazy part about it, Nacho. Like, as I'm visualizing this experience for you, so that it's not lost on like people who are listening that don't do biking or running or swimming, a triathlon by itself is like super challenging for a person to do. An Ironman is like a triathlon on crack. And so like the fact that a person has completed an Ironman by themselves is a huge accomplishment, like lifetime accomplishment. But to do it with a teammate in tandem takes it to another level. Your partner is doing it visually impaired, cannot see, and you're guiding him. Like, that's crazy.
So, yeah, for both of us, it's like exhausting. We end up totally empty because in one hand, he needs to do this big accomplishment that he never did before. And I have to look after him. It's not like I'm looking after my pace. I have to go his pace and I have to, okay, we need to do it. So we need to speed up. Otherwise, it's going to be over. We came from a long place just to, we are not going to finish now. So let's do it. So it's challenging. It's challenging, but was awesome. Was really awesome. You shouldn't have seen his face when he finished. He was the happiest guy in the world. And that, I mean, that's priceless.
And so you reference that this all came through, you said Achilles, right?
Yeah, Achilles.
So obviously I have the benefit of the doubt of being able to talk with you this past weekend when you were here, but could you just tell our listeners a little bit more about Achilles? Cause it's really amazing. Yeah. How did you get involved with Achilles is Achilles?
The thing is that how I start all this is that I was watching when an old friend of mine, my friend Howard from London, from when I was living in London, I was visiting him during the Olympic Games and we were watching the TV. He was a runner before me. And I was already a runner and we were watching the Olympic Games and then there actually was the Paralympics. And then they was just saying that that was the first Olympic Games that the guys were going to the podium with the athletes and receiving a medal. And we were like, wow, that's pretty nice. No, this is pretty awesome. And obviously they deserve also a medal. And we look at each other and say, we should do this, no? That's a pretty nice thing to add to our passion for running. So when I went back to Spain, I had a friend who was working for ONCE, which in Spanish means 11, but it's the acronym for Organización Nacional de Ciegos Españoles, which is basically National Organization for Spanish Blind People. So I asked him to guide them and they were super happy and I was volunteering and guiding them for a year. And then I moved to New York. And I did kind of my research about because I wanted to keep doing it, but I didn't find how. And then during the first marathon that I was here, I couldn't qualify for it because I was just not enough time to qualify. And I saw the Achilles t-shirts, the yellow ones. And I was like, hang on. That's what I'm looking for. that's what I want to do. So I basically just contact them and they just took me and say, yeah, of course, come. You just need to show up and we will pay you someone. And I remember that day, that was like almost 4 years ago. They paired me with my good friend Charles, that we have been racing since then a lot of times, and he's almost qualifying for the next Olympic Games. And then I started guiding, and then they told me, you have a triathlon background, we would like you to guide in the triathlon team. I've been doing that since then. And I'm super involved with Achilles, it's my family. And so Achilles is a non-profit organization that enables people with all types of disabilities to participate in mainstream running events in order to promote personal achievement. The founder is Dick Trump, who created this nonprofit at the beginning of the 80s. And he was like, I think it was 1996, 1997, he was the first amputee with a prosthetic leg to finish New York Marathon. So he started this nonprofit, and basically the nonprofit is specialized in running, and it's got a parallel team, but also has an Achilles Freedom Team, which has bounded military personnel and veterans, an Achilles Kid, which provides training, sneakers to an in all school program for children with disabilities. And they have chapters all around the country and international too. They also have a signature race, which is called Hope and Possibility, which takes place in several cities worldwide. In New York, it's in June and qualifies for New York Marathon. So basically, there's chapters in everywhere. There's like in Germany, in Australia, in Mongolia, in Malaysia, there's everywhere. And Melbourne, Belarus, Brazil, Bulgaria, Canada. So you can, if you're lucky, you will have a chapter and you can go a guide, or if you have any kind of disability, they will help you to train and to race. And there's China, there's Colombia, there's Cuba, there's Dominican Republic, Ecuador, everywhere, France, Georgia. And also there's national chapters in the States, which is like New York, Arizona, California, Colorado, Connecticut, D.C., Florida, Georgia, Philadelphia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Very cool. So, and I think we've got the website address, so then that people...
Yeah, it's called Achilles International. You can find all the information there. And you can fundraise for Achilles. So you know that you could compete in major marathons and you will raise money for Achilles, or you can also guide with Achilles and participate in those events. And so, yeah, and you will meet our amazing team. We got, for instance, Ricardo Corral, which is an amputee from Ecuador. He has won the four majors in tennis in a wheelchair, the four majors, Wimbledon, French Open, Australia, and US Open. And he has won the five majors in the marathons, hand cycling.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, we have John Young, which is one of my favorite teammates. He's a little person with dwarfism, and he's been the first little person to finish an Ironman last year, the first the world. He's a rock star. So I got this teammate. I'm so lucky with that. And I got also Anthony that you met last week in New Orleans when we went down to New Orleans. And yeah, mm-hmm. It goes from everywhere. So I'm seeing from, he's from Pakistan, or from Charles, who is from France, or people from New York, people who has like, and has been an accident and have like brain damage, or just amputees, or visual impaired. Yeah, we got a lot of visual impairs. Yeah, that's, and people in wheelchairs, people in hard cycling, everything. That's Achilles.
Very cool. And so we're gonna stop there, Nacho, because this has been an excellent opportunity to chat with you and like hear about some of the stories from your life and the work that you're doing with Achilles and all your challenges. I know for certain that you're gonna crush it and get your time for Boston.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so with that, we're gonna do our lead out.
That was a pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, Nacho, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. My name is Trey.
And I'm Quest. Thank you for listening to The Truest Adventure.